It's Bill F. and it's Mike Toomey sitting in for Wendy. Wendy will be back tomorrow. Right now we're going to talk to Tom Ahern. Tom is a senior special agent with the ATF, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives, to talk about his angle on what's going on there in Orlando, Florida, after yesterday's horrific events. Tom, thank you very much for being here. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Bill, for having me.
Beside the obvious, which is what happened was just an awful, 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 awful day for all of America, for all the world. Everything that happened yesterday was awful. Where does your bureau come in exactly in a case like this, Tom?
Well, first of all, Bill, on behalf of all the law enforcement and first responders who are working that scene in Orlando, we want to express our sincere condolences to the victims and their families and loved ones. This has been just another horrific event in our nation's history, and they're very difficult scenes to work, even for the well-seasoned law enforcement officers and first responders. We've had far too many of these mass shootings in our country, at schools and nightclubs and movie theaters, places of worship, and these incidents, unfortunately, have become part of the fabric of our country, where now law enforcement has made a, quote-unquote, an active shooter situation part of our ongoing training. That's what's come of all these mass shootings in our country. So we just want to express our responses too.
And what you just said, Tom, about how now that's part of the training, that's fairly recent that it's become part of the training, isn't it?
It has. I mean, basically, it's been ramped up because of the frequency in the last few years, and it's very much a part of the law enforcement training.
And Orlando sadly had not one but two incidents. They had the girl from The Voice who was shot and killed on Friday night, and then of course the situation that we're all talking about from late Saturday into Sunday morning. How awful for any city to have to endure two of those events in one weekend.
Oh, absolutely. And whenever you have the combination of a person who is filled with hate and is in possession of a gun, It's just a very, very dangerous combination. And, right now in Orlando, at the scene of the nightclub, I mean, there's just a massive investigation that's ongoing. There's such a great deal of work that still needs to be done and will be done in a very methodical, thorough manner. First of all, I mean, to determine, was he inspired or was he enabled by others, or possibly was he self-radicalized? So the timeline of his movements and his actions will all have to be established, which is a major undertaking. But they'll look very closely at all of his electronic devices, his iPhone, his computer. They'll all be analyzed in hopes of gaining intelligence information as to what his motive was, why he carried this out, why he chose this particular location on this day to carry out his terrorist massacre. So all of that is still being investigated.
Tom, are you of the belief, I heard this alluded to yesterday on several different television shows that were covering the events, that if he were a lone wolf, if this was just a guy not with any affiliations to any terrorist groups, that it's harder to describe, it's harder to kind of figure out a motive for him as just somebody. I think his dad was the first one to say that he had seen two men kissing earlier, a month or so ago, and it disturbed him, and he wanted revenge on that. If he's not affiliated to any terrorist group, if this is just a guy with private thoughts in his head, then it's hard to come up with motives, isn't it?
These investigations are very, very challenging for law enforcement. It's basically the intelligence surrounding and intelligence gathering surrounding an investigation like this is basically it's intelligence triage, where you're trying to prioritize all the information that's coming in, and then you're that's on your currently on your radar, and you prioritize that and investigate it. You know, so these cases are very, very challenging.
Tom, I'm curious about this. At the very beginning of the show, at the very start of the show at 10 o'clock, we talked about the story a little bit, and somebody called up and said, this is not a story about guns. Don't make this a story about guns. You're with the Department of Justice. Is this or isn't this a story about guns?
Well, I could tell you this, Bill. ATF, and we enforce the federal firearms laws. And under the Gun Control Act of 1968, The American citizens have the constitutional right to buy a firearm and to own a firearm unless they've been convicted of a felony, a prior felony, they've been adjudicated mentally ill, they have a domestic violence conviction, or they're currently under indictment for a felony. Other than that, if those aren't present, there's nothing prohibiting a person from purchasing a firearm. And in this case, it appears that he purchased those guns legally.
Now, this was a guy, and I'm sure you're well aware of this. He was kind of on an FBI watch list. They had interviewed him a couple of times. There were complaints from his coworkers that he was unstable, that he was constantly making how do I say it politely? Racist comments and suggestions that were disturbing a lot of people. But he had never done anything illegal. I know he had a very rough relationship with his ex-wife, and that's one issue. But he had never done anything that was anywhere a red flag to what he did over the weekend. So what do you do with a guy who's obviously a problem child but hasn't done anything to make you realize that he could have done what he eventually did?
Well, he was on the FBI's radar, and they did look at him. And they did speak with him, from what I understand, in the past. And it's what I talked about earlier, where they basically have to, it's such a challenge with all the intelligence information coming in, all the individuals that are on this radar, you basically have to prioritize which ones you feel are the greatest threat or could potentially become a threat. And that's who you focus most of your attention on. So that's basically where he stood.
But Tom, here's where it becomes difficult, and you already know this, but I'll say it anyway. If we're constantly told, if you see something, say something. So in this case, you have a couple of coworkers who are following those orders. We've seen something. We've seen a guy with a very short fuse who seems to blow up easily. Now we're saying something, and then there's no real result because he hasn't done anything illegal. It kind of ties all of our hands, doesn't it?
Right. Well, if you look at his wife, his ex-wife, if in fact she reported the domestic abuse, and if he was convicted of that or indicted for that at the time, he would have been a prohibited person from buying those guns legally.
And that, so
that oftentimes, Bill, you know, what we find too is even if a person is a prohibited individual who has a prior felony conviction or a domestic violence conviction of some sort that would prohibit him from buying a gun legally, there's still a black market out there for guns. And if an individual is motivated enough to carry out whatever hate crime he or she wanted to do, they're going to find a way to get a gun.
Tom, where do you stand on this? I've mentioned this on the show before, but I'm anxious to hear your opinion. These acts are so random. It's impossible to keep an eye on everybody who's potentially dangerous. It's a weird combination of possibly mental illness, possibly religious beliefs, possibly hatred towards, in this guy's case, gay people. There's so many different elements and components to throw in there that it is virtually impossible to predict or prevent something like this from happening, right?
Well, there are so many soft targets that are out there where an individual who wants to carry out a hate crime, and we've seen it in recent history in the United States here, the school shootings, the nightclubs, the movie theaters, the places of worship, those are all soft targets. And that's what America stands for. I mean, to be able to have the freedom to go to these places with your family and your friends and not have to worry about coming under attack from a deranged gunman. And so it's basically a trade-off. I mean, we have to be, we know that that's part of our world right now, and that possibility is always there, but we cannot live in fear, and we can't let these terrorist organizations instill fear in all of us. We have to go on and live our lives and just be vigilant about it. And if there is something that stands out, yes, you have to come forward with that information and to law enforcement, and hopefully we'd be able to head something off.
Tom, I know we don't have a lot of time with you, but I'm curious, what happens over the next couple of days? I know, as you pointed out, there are people pouring through any of his email correspondence and maybe his phone records and cell phone records, that sort of thing.
Sure.
But take us through the rest of what the next few days will bring there in Orlando, Florida.
Well, basically, the crime scene is still very active, and it's going to be worked in a very meticulous, methodical manner. Every shell casing has to be photographed and collected and analyzed, and the timeline has to be reconstructed of the shooter's movements. When he arrived, the things he said, the phone calls that he made, all of those have to be recreated, so to speak, in order to know what his movements were. That's just the investigative part of working the scene. Then there's the background on the shooter himself, you know, what his motivations were.
Yeah.
Hopefully his iPhone, his computer, once all of that is completely analyzed, they'll be able to gain more intelligence information as to whether, he was radicalized or whether he was inspired by someone. And so there's still a great deal of work to be done. And, you know, there's the one thing I wanted to add is the psychological long-term impact on the families of the victims, mm-hmm. and their loved ones, and also the survivors, and I'll take it a step further, the first responders. The first responders working a scene like this, law enforcement and first responders, we're all human too, and we have families and loved ones, and to walk into a scene like that and work that scene is very difficult, you know, but we have to. That's what the first responders do. I mean, yeah. They willingly risk their own lives in order to save the lives of the innocent people out there. So, you know, we salute them.
Tom, thank you for spending time with us. I certainly wish this discussion was under better circumstances, but we always appreciate your expertise. Thank you so much for this.
You're welcome, Bill.
Take care.
You too.
That's Senior Special Agent Tom Ahern, Public Information Officer with U.S. Department of Justice, ATF Division, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. With, as he just pointed out, a lot more going on there in Orlando over the next couple of days. We have to take a quick break. We'll come back and then more show. It's Bill F. and Mike Toomey sitting in for Wendy Snyder on WGN.